Welcome to Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content and pays for it. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you wherever you may be. This is your host, Bruce Ash, along with co-host
Eb Wilkinson.
Welcoming you to a What the Hell Are Joe and Biden Hunter Hiding? And Why Has Big Tech Been Working So Hard to Make Sure the Truth is Hidden from Voters? Edition of Inside Track. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. We do have a jam-packed show again today, but before we get down to business, I have some breaking personal and political news to share with our listeners. Friend, longtime opinion writer, and national political observer Ralph Hallow of the Washington Times died today after a brief hospitalization as a result of an accident at age 82. Hallow followed the Republican National Committee for many years and was one of its greatest critics as well as supporters. His sources and connections were extensive. He was a real writer's writer. He not only reported and opined about conservative politics, he helped move and shape the movement. His salon dinners at RNC meetings were infamous. They were a very tough ticket to get, and I was honored to attend several of them, a place where you could really tell the truth to one another and not be afraid of the repercussions. Ralph was a real throwback kind of guy. Rest easy, friend. They aren't making them like you anymore these days, but I hope some of your journalistic DNA ends up on some young up-and-comer sooner than later. Blessings to his widow, Millie Hallow, his family, friends, and fellow journalists who worked with him. Rest in peace, friend. Okay, starting the show this rather warm fall afternoon. I thought, Eb, we were getting towards real fall.
I did too. But apparently that didn't happen.
But getting to our guest today, we have Dr. Jack McGettigan, who's in charge of the Moderna virus vaccination trials. This is the China virus vaccination trials here in Tucson, to tell us how the trials are going. Then we welcome CD1 Republican nominee for Congress, Tiffany Shedd, who will join us after our first break. And then after the bottom of the hour, we're pleased. This is a real get, and this was Eb's get. We're pleased to welcome former American Conservative Union founder and president, former NRA president, and Washington Times general editor, David Keene, to the show. And I thank Eb for his work putting that together. So, listen up. We have a great show for you today on Inside Track. Many thanks to our great sponsors and supporters of Inside Track, Gary Imus, and my Inside Track partner, Eb Wilkinson at Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Jamie Kipper and her dad, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and the kids from Corazon Cabinets, Joy, Allie, and David. I do business with all of them. You should also. Speaking of Corazon, do you have a home improvement project you want to start before the holidays? And you're worried if you can afford the luxury you deserve? Corazon Cabinet sells quality J&K, Conestoga, and Waypoint cabinets. We have a new supplier starting up real soon. I'll have some news on that for you shortly. Plus, Corazon offers professional design resources for your home. Call Corazon Cabinets at 488-2266 and schedule a visit to the showroom. It's an easy number to remember, 488-2266. Big doings. Corazon Cabinets has just started their showroom move, and I saw the pictures yesterday. They're hauling ass and making big changes. Call Monday for some even greater specials on their bargain price quality products for your home. They have some great glass upper cabinets that are just gorgeous, and you can buy those. Those usually are about a 50% uptick. You can buy those for really less than getting like a regular cabinet. They're fabulous. When you call, tell Joy, Allie, or David you heard this ad with Bruce and Eb on Inside Track and get an additional 5% discount on their already low wholesale prices. Corazon Cabinets, luxury you can afford. Tom, do we have Dr. McGettigan yet? Oh, that dirty dog. Well, we'll talk a little about this. Eb, I was hosting for Chris DeSimone, about a little over 2 months ago, in early August. And there was this guy who came onto the show, came into the studio dressed in his medical scrubs, Dr. McGettigan. I had no idea who the fellow was. And anyway, sat down. I was sitting right where you are, and he was next to me. And he started talking about the Moderna vaccine trials that he was starting up here in Tucson. He's a contractor from Moderna. They're doing about,
okay,
I think 300,000 of these tests with people all around the country. And after listening to him for a part of a segment, we went to break. And during the break, I said, "Hey, doctor, can anybody get into the trials?" He said, "Sure." He gave me an email address. During the break, I emailed to that address. About an hour later, they emailed me back. They asked a series, I think 4 or 6 questions, something like that, different health-related things. Nothing personal, really. And I answered those questions, sent them back, on their link. And I think a couple of days later, I got a longer form questionnaire. I filled that out, and about a week later, I was in for my first appointment, which was an extensive physical checkup. Very scientific, very organized, very much, they do it the right way. And I took the first shot the next day because they want to take their time. I was COVID tested. I was antibody tested. I mean, they really did a full workup on me.
Why did you not tell me about this? I would have done it.
Well, it's obvious. I want you to die.
Oh my God.
No, I think I did because I've talked to so many different people about it. It was a no-brainer. Okay. They came in.
So now, is this like a placebo in the real thing, or is it all the real stuff?
No, I don't know for sure officially whether I took the placebo or got the juice. However, the only reaction that I had to the vaccination, they did it in my left arm, in my bicep.
Sure.
And for probably 3 or 4 days, and by the way, for the first week, I sent in a daily diary to them with my temperature and symptom check and so on. And the only symptom, if you will, or sign that I had taken the shot at all was a very sort of a bruised, upper shoulder or upper bicep. And anyway, it was kind of stiff and hard for about 3 or 4 days. And I did talk with the doctor when I came in for a follow-up. And he told me, I asked him, I know you can't tell me what, if I got the placebo or not, but what do you think? He says, "Well, how did your arm feel?" I told him how my arm felt. He says, "I think you got the real juice." Because he said, if we gave you sugar water, arm wouldn't have hurt. So, I have been, I'm now taking my second vaccination. They do not only this diary, but they do sort of a call-in sort of a thing, to like a well check on the trials participants. Now, I know that they're advertising a lot right now, and if Dr. McGettigan were to join us, and maybe that's who Tom has on the phone right now, but maybe not, they're advertising to try to get more people.
I'm in.
As part of the project. Now, here's the catch, though.
Uh-oh.
They want people of color. And you're about as white bread,
oh my God,
as they come, okay? So maybe, maybe not, okay? However, your age and your physical background would be ideal. And, call at the Quality of Life Medical Center. They're right, across the street from Tucson Medical Center. It's a great team. I mean, he's literally got dozens of people in the office at any time doing their physicals and people following up and so on.
I will do that.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm very, very impressed with them and looking forward to that. And anybody who does want to participate, sorry, Jack couldn't make it with us today. I sent him an email or a text this morning, but maybe we'll have him on the show next week.
Well, if I don't hear anything between now and next week, If he's on the show, I'll ask him to get into the study.
Well, after the show, I'll give you the information.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's nice. You'll have a good time. All right, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. And when we return from the break, we'll welcome Tiffany Shedd, candidate for Congress in CD1. You're listening to Inside Track. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
A lot of the cities and the counties around have initiatives for artists. I think we're one of the premier artist suppliers for steel. First Saturday of every month, you can come down early and actually go through the scrap yard across the street. It's 7 acres of metal. You can walk through with our people and pick out what you want. It's always interesting to see what the artists have done. We've done actually a couple projects with the U of A Engineering Department and Music Department, where the engineering music students came down together. They had to pick something out of the scrap, and they had to build an instrument. And we have one of those in front of the plant. Some really cool things come out of the scrap.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. I don't ever want you to be dependent on government ever again. I want you to become financially independent. You will never, ever have to depend on socialist security for your survival. We are here to guide you to financial independence. That's imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Eb and Bruce here. Our guest to the bottom of the hour is Tiffany Shedd, candidate for Congress in CD1. Tiffany is an inspiring candidate. I don't say that often. We've known one another for a while, but I heard her personal story she told recently. And I have to share with you, I was even more impressed with her after hearing about her path to where she is today. I think she's going to beat Tom O'Halloran in 17 days. Welcome, ma'am. I invite candidates and political leaders such as yourself to the show, not as a trade to sell their political ads, because I don't care about making money from you guys. I want you to win. And friends, Tiffany can win, and I hope she represents AZ1 for a long time. You do have quite a story to tell, and before we get to a couple of points that I want to cover with you, can you relate how your dinner conversation with your husband led to your journey to Congress? Tiffany?
Hello, Tiffany.
Hello, Tiffany. Where are you, Mama?
Sorry, hello. I'm so sorry. The phone glitched.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes. A little louder, Tiffany. So tell us, Can you relate how your dinner conversation with your husband led to your journey to Congress?
Yes, absolutely. We were actually up at a Arizona High School rodeo in Prescott, Arizona, and my husband and I went out to dinner without the kids, and I was complaining. Yeah, date night. It started out as a date night. Anyway, we're small business owners. We farm. I've done natural resource law and business law. Anyway, I was complaining to my husband that we didn't have good representation in Arizona 1, that there was unique challenges, that, you know, it was just tougher and tougher to, you know, build businesses, create jobs, our seniors, Social Security, access to healthcare, you name it. And he said, we have to find somebody to run for Congress, and we're going to support this person. We'll do whatever we have to do to get him elected. And he says, I've got the perfect person, but they're never going to run. They are behind the scenes. They're cowards. They don't have the courage to run. And I said, I'm pretty persistent, and I'll get him to run. So who is it? And we will get him to run. And he said, babe, it's you. And I was a little bit shocked. I said, I can't run for Congress. I'm from rural Arizona. And then the second that came out of my mouth, I thought, oh, my gosh.
What did you just say?
What did I just say? If that's not the whole system of government, that people like the people they represent should be going to the House of Representatives. And then I said, you're a total jerk. I am not a coward. I'm not courageous. And I'm not running for Congress. And so the dinner kind of became less of a date and more of a little bit of a tussle. But, you know, thought about it over time. And, you know, unfortunately, my husband has a habit of being right. And we've been married 30 years, been, you know, known him since second grade. He's an older man. I met him, you know, he was a third grader when I met him in second grade.
Oh, he was robbing the cradle.
Yeah, he was. And so here we are today. And, you know, it's more important than ever. We do have unique challenges. 2020 has brought those out and made them more extreme. And so I think that, you know, it's time we actually have representation from Arizona, and that, you know, my family has felt the same things that people here do, dealt with the same things. And, you know, it's a lot more meaningful when you're voting and making policy and you know that, you know, where that rubber hits the road with the people in your district. And, you know, Tom O'Halloran, the press helps him, but, you know, says he's bipartisan, says he's a moderate. But the fact of the matter is he's voting 97% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. And I just don't think she makes a very good congresswoman for Arizona 1.
So the polls are very, very tight. I mean, you're right there neck and neck with them. Talk about the economy, getting folks back to work, empowering and helping small businesses. You're a small business owner. O'Halloran voted against the Trump tax cuts. They benefited the average Arizona family by $1,800. What the heck would lead voters to support somebody who wants to reverse taxes and charge, and probably even more than $1,800 if they do Green New Deal stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people just didn't know who he was. He says one thing in the district, votes another. He just voted to give California and New York millionaires tax cuts, but had voted against the Trump tax cuts, which helped small business owners, average families, a lot of things. And then right now, you know, the heart of Arizona 1 is our small business community. And they've been really hurting with this pandemic. I mean, thankfully, the Trump policies of lower regulation, lower taxes put us in a strong spot to start with. But it's been months, and it's been 5 months since the CARES Act was passed. And he's coming into the district saying, well, I voted for the HEROES Act. It's Republicans that are stopping this. But let me tell you why Republicans didn't vote for the HEROES Act. It provided giving $1,200 direct payments to illegal aliens, releasing violent criminals out of prison early, not shifting $600 million away from police grants.
Right.
You know, it just goes on and on, just things that would be just terrible. And so, you know, those are not good things. If I think it's really important right now that anything stimulus needs to go to the people who actually need it, not just be a socialist wish list.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, on the salt tax, that's the rich guy's deduction that Republicans ended with the Trump tax cuts. I mean, it is unbelievable that a guy who represents rural Arizona would want to reverse that, give these huge benefits. I mean, actually, the salt tax deduction was one of the main sort of stumbling blocks, you know, to getting the Trump tax cuts done. We needed that kind of additional taxes in order to make everything balance out. Now he wants to go back to that. He's obviously voted for it, and he wants to defund the police. He wants to give stimulus checks to illegals. And do all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, does he know who he represents in CD1?
Well, he represents Nancy Pelosi. I don't think that we're much of a thought. And you know, it's kind of funny. They've been running ads against me saying I voted against pre-existing conditions, but I've actually never held office. So I don't know how you get a congressional. So people might want to fact check some of those ads. And that's just patently untrue.
Well, they do these sort of system ads where they just, you know, insert a name. It doesn't make any difference whether the facts match up.
Right. And Bruce, here's the thing. We're self-employed, so we had to buy our own insurance. And our daughter, when she was six, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and is still insulin dependent. That's a complete pre-existing condition. I'm a cancer survivor. Under the Affordable Care Act, our insurance dropped us, and our premiums, we were lucky to get insurance for $26,000 a year for a family of five. It's anything but affordable. And so the thought that I would pull the rug out of any other family that had to go through what mine did is absolutely completely ludicrous. There's, you know, I think people can agree, either have a pre-existing condition or you're going to have one. And, you know, this whole thing that they're harping on and saying I voted when I've not been a member of Congress is so strange. But, you know, that's something that we can fix. It's unfortunate, you know, they're using it politically when it's not true. But, you know, hopefully people check it out and check the facts.
Yeah, so this is a very, very tight election. Tiffany needs all the support she can find before the November 3rd election, and probably going after that as well, because there's likely to be a legal fight that goes on for some period of time. The last couple of elections have been pretty close, and I suspect they will be close again this time. Tiffany, I mentioned at the start how inspired I was listening to you when you came down to Tucson last week. And I know I told you earlier I wasn't going to send you any money because I support the RNC like crazy and I just don't have the dough to support every candidate. I am declaring here in this show later this afternoon when I get home, I'm sending you a check for $500 for your campaign, because you are not just an inspiring candidate. You're somebody who really understands this district and knows what it takes. You're going to, like you said to your husband that night, you know, you're going to work hard for rural Arizona, and your district is like the sixth largest state, I think, in the union. It's as large as Illinois, and it deserves somebody, a hard worker like you, who's going to put their time and their effort and really spend time. Nobody sees Tom O'Halloran here in Southern Arizona, and I think you're going to make a great, great U.S. congressman.
And thank you so much for that support. Every dollar is going to voter contact at this point. And, you know, ads for radio, we're up on, I think, 40 rural radio. And we just got back from Page, have been spending a lot of time on the Navajo Nation. My husband and children are actually Native American.
That's right.
And so we've dealt with a lot of the tribal issues, Indian health care. My family goes to Indian health care. And so, you know, those issues are important to me. But, you know, I can promise you one thing, Bruce. I'll always put Arizona first. I mean, this is the state I love. This is the state I've raised my family and built my businesses in. And to be perfectly honest with you, this is the state my bones will be buried in. Mm. And I want to see it prosper. There's no better people. And, you know, the Nancy Pelosi put in, I think, almost $8 million for Tom
Halloran. Unbelievable.
Wow. Against me. But here's the thing, Bruce. He can have her and her $8 million because I have the people of CD1, and there's no people I trust more with the future of our country than the people of Arizona and the people of Arizona 1.
Well, Tiffany Shedd, thanks for coming on the show. We're going to have you on once before the election happens on the 3rd. Give to Tiffany. Tiffany, one more time, your website address.
ShedForCongress.com, ShedForCongress.com.
Tiffany, thanks for coming on the show. Tom, let's go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back with special guest David Keene. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm proud to welcome my good friends at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail to Inside Track as an advertiser. Jamie Kipper and her staff are conservation experts. They sell round and square steel tubing, metal plate and roofing materials, as well as new and used steel, aluminum, and stainless steel to ranchers, artists, interior designers, roofers, and do-it-yourselfers, just like all of the listeners here. Tucson Iron and Metal Retail is open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Tucson Iron and Steel Retail, 701 East 36th Street. Call 520-209-1576 or go to TucsonIronRetail.com. And when you do call, mention this ad and receive an additional 10% discount on their already great prices.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Wouldn't it be great if political leaders could create that country again? Learn how to do exactly that, one family at a time, with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. Call me, Eb Wilkinson. IMUSWilkinson.com. 777-1911. 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Our guest for the rest of the show today is a man Eb and I greatly respect, David Keene, a key leader in the conservative movement. Eb will cover some of that shortly with you. David, welcome to the show. You and I and Eb are friends with Ralph Hallow. I hope I'm not giving you this news first, but Ralph passed earlier today. Your thoughts on Ralph as a conservative and as a observer and opinion maker in the conservative movement?
Well, Ralph was a good friend, as you know, for many years. We worked together at the Washington Times. He was the chief political reporter while I was there as the opinion editor of the Times. He played an incredibly important role in Washington and nationally in terms of the journalism that he practiced. When the Washington Times was founded, they made a decision not to just cover the same stories that the alternate paper, the liberal Washington Post, covered, but to cover other things in other ways. And Ralph Hallow made himself the nation's top journalistic expert on the conservative movement and the Republican Party. You couldn't find news about what was going on within the Republican Party in any kind of an objective way in the Washington Post or the New York Times. You could find it in the Washington Times.
Yeah.
He was a tough reporter. He, of course, like a lot of us in his youth, was a leftist who then saw the light and was. But he had over the years a tremendous impact on the way that the press had to look at conservatives and Republicans.
You know, I reached out to Reince Priebus earlier today, and this is what Reince said. I don't think he would mind me sharing this. He said, he had some bombs for me, but I learned how to handle him, loop him in, talk to him, go to lunch once in a while, and had to feed him some goodies now and then. He still bombed me, but not as bad. He was a fun and nice man. He liked me and was always happy about the RNC and how things turned out. I really like unique characters like him. So anyway,
he was a character,
and yes,
a delightful
was.
Character in many ways.
Yeah.
My friend of my family and my children, and we're all going to miss him.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on the show, and I appreciate. I didn't mean to steal yours and Eb's thunder a little bit here at the beginning,
but it's a glorious steal.
I think we're all going to miss him, and I know you know, with your background in the conservative movement, how closely you guys work together. So, David, here's Eb. He was very nervous that you were going to call in on time, so he's ready to fire away at you, man.
I've already messed it up several times.
That's okay. Hey, David. You know, you've championed conservative causes for more than five decades, offered advice to Republican presidents, countless candidates, founded the American Conservative Union, and president of the National Rifle Association. What has the five decades of championing conservative causes taught you as to who we are as Americans?
Well, it's made me optimistic, but it's also made me realize, as Ronald Reagan once said, that we're at any time just a generation away from surrendering or losing our freedoms, because the fights that we engage in, the political fights, the fights over principle, are not fights that are ever really won. We win battles, the war goes on, and the threats to our freedom are as great today as they were when I first got involved in politics and even before. And, you know, you wonder, say, well, gee, all this time that you spent and you haven't gotten anywhere? Yeah, we've gotten somewhere because our freedoms are still intact, and the fight goes on, and it's going on right now.
Are the threats the same over and over, or are they different now than they were, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago?
They take different forms. In some ways, it's, as Yogi Berra would say, like deja vu all over again, because the political situation today in some ways resembles 1968, for example, when we had the leftist, young leftist generation of that era rioting in the streets, and we had the violence, and we had the crime, and we had all of that thing. But it's different today in the sense that the people, the radicals of the 60s, stayed on in our colleges and in our culture, and fought on, and are in a stronger position today than they were then. So I think in that sense, even though the political battle has gone back and forth, Ronald Reagan's really, if he didn't win the war, set the forces that that would put all of the power in the hands of the state back by a couple of decades. Donald Trump has done the same thing, and of course the reaction to both men while they were in office was incredibly hostile. That's what we see today, because we are threatening, and Donald Trump is threatening the, you know, what he likes to call the swamp, which is really the establishment liberalism that's dominated the culture and the politics of this country, except for certain interludes, for decades. And when that's threatened, the establishment circles the wagons and fights as if their lives depended on it, and this time they do. But, you know, the big difference of this time is that we've had battles before. Liberals have won, Democrats have won, conservatives and Republicans have won, and then both sides sort of civilly accept the answer, go back, and then fight it all out again, and then maybe the same side will win or the other side will win. This time, the so-called progressives, who now dominate the Democratic Party, have been so upset by the fact that they didn't win last time and that they haven't been able to accomplish what they've set out to accomplish, that they've decided that is never going to happen again, and that if they can win this election, if they can take the White House and the Senate, they're by golly going to change the rules so that the other side never gets another shot. And I think that's what's so different about this election. This time, everything really is on the table. The Constitution's on the table. The separation of powers is on the table. The Supreme Court's on the table. And if things go bad in November, we won't recognize the country that we live in 4 years or 8 years or 10 years down the road.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court for a second. Joe Biden basically stated, well, he didn't state that he wanted to pack the courts. And he didn't assert that because he doesn't want that out there. He comes out and he says...
He doesn't want it from the left problems, and he doesn't want it from the right problems.
Right. He doesn't want people to know where he stands before the election. It's like Nancy Pelosi, you've got to pass the bill to find out what's in the bill.
Yeah, what that means is that he's willing to pack the court. Now, one of the reasons that this is all a threat, and I'm very... excited by and interested in the fact that there is a real movement now to amend the Constitution with the very simple phrase that the Supreme Court of the United States will consist of 9 justices. Because even when they have failed to pack the court, you know, throughout our history, proposals to change the makeup of the court have always been politically inspired. It was reduced in number after the Lincoln assassination because the Congress didn't like his successor. And then after he left office, it was raised back to 9, where it's been ever since. But President Roosevelt tried to pack it. He was going to raise it up to 15 if he had to, and in order to get his way, because he didn't like the decisions the court was issuing. He lost that fight politically, but he pressured the court into accepting things that they might not have accepted had he not done it. You may recall last year the court was considering taking up some Second Amendment cases, and Chuck Schumer in the Senate said, if you do that, we've got the option of changing the makeup of the court, and the court dropped him, didn't take up those cases. This time what Mr. Biden is saying, as you listen to him, he says, well, I'm not a fan of that, but we're going to wait and see what these people do. What the Senate does with the current confirmation hearings. What he's saying is, look, you confirm this appointment, and we're going to pack the court. And that's what they intend to do if they win the White House and a majority in the Senate.
How many Supreme Court vacancies have come up during election years, and what were the general results?
There have been 29. Every president who has had a vacancy has appointed someone in the election year. When the White House and the Senate are in the same hands, there have been 19 cases, and in 17 cases, those were confirmed. When the power is split between the White House and the Senate, the nominees like Merrick Garland and others haven't fared as well for obvious reasons. But, you know, when they say this is something unique, probably the most consequential appointment ever to the Supreme Court was John Marshall. John Marshall was appointed by John Adams after John Adams had lost the election and was a lame duck president with a lame duck Senate because the when the inauguration came around, which would be in March, his successor was going to be a man at the time he hated, Thomas Jefferson. So while he was a lame duck, while the Senate was a lame duck, he appointed John Marshall, who was confirmed. And there was criticism of Marshall, basically because he hadn't practiced law for a long time. But nobody suggested that the president didn't have the authority to do that. And I think John Adams and those other presidents sort of agreed with Donald Trump that they were elected for 4 years, not for three and a half, not for three, but for 4 years. And they have every right to do that. And every president has, or has at least tried.
David, the Supreme Court has largely been a liberal Supreme Court going back close to 80 years, maybe more. What changes in terms of the focus of the court there might be with Judge Barrett's going onto the court? What do you see anything that's significantly consequential? I mean, there's some people that say that even with her there, it's still going to be a moderate court, yet the left says it's going to be a radical right-wing court. What's your view on that?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a radical court. Courts don't really tend to be that way.
I agree.
There'll be some changes. There'll be different nuances. They'll take different cases. You know, I've spent a lot of my adult life fighting for Second Amendment rights and to protect the right to keep and bear arms for law-abiding citizens of this country. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, Congress, sort of threatening to pack the court, had made the court back off from accepting a number of cases on affecting Second Amendment rights during the last year. I think with a majority of people who are pro-Second Amendment, some of those cases will be accepted. You know, I often have observed that Second Amendment law today is like First Amendment law was in the 1920s. We all knew everybody then, we don't know this anymore because people claim differently, but we knew then that there was a right to free speech. But we didn't know how much you could tax it, what kind of restrictions you could put on it. It took 100 court cases or 80 court cases over the years to really lay out what you could and couldn't do in terms of restricting or exercising your First Amendment rights. After the Supreme Court decisions in Heller and McDonald some years ago, we now know for a certainty that the court says, yes, law-abiding Americans have a right to own firearms for legitimate purposes, but we don't know to what degree restrictions can be put on that right. And every fundamental right is hemmed in by some restrictions. The famous line about the First Amendment is you don't have the right to yell fire in a crowded theater. But what they tried to do, the people that didn't like the First Amendment tried to do, was tax it, make it too expensive, restrict where you could do it. And that's what they're now trying to do with Second Amendment rights. And we won't know until all of those cases get to the Supreme Court exactly what is and what isn't legal in terms of the rights that we enjoy under the Second Amendment. That's one area where I think the court would have a significant impact. And Mr. Biden and the Democrats, it's also one of the reasons they want to pack the court, because they're religiously anti-firearms. If you go to Joe Biden's webpage, there are pages after page of restrictions he wants to put on, which would essentially destroy the firearms production industry in this country, would make it virtually impossible for citizens to have firearms. He'd like to do all that, and he can't do that unless he can change the court. And if there are a number of other things they can't do either. What they want is a court that whatever they pass, the court will say, okay, that's a good idea, and we can interpret the Constitution in some way to make it possible for you to do what you want to do. That really removes, from the role the founders saw, one of the three major branches of the U.S. government. It makes it completely subservient to the other branches.
So, David, let's talk about that for a second and what Joe Biden wants to do. Let's go back 200 and change years. Let's say George Washington had access to an AR-15.
would have been very happy during the Revolutionary
would he have, War. Exactly. But would he have said this is far too powerful a weapon for my simple farmers to be trusted with?
No, he would not have. And that's really what the court said in the Heller and McDonald decisions, that these are firearms that the courts didn't restrict it to muzzle loaders back when the breech loaders were possible. They didn't ban bolt action rifles. They didn't ban semi-automatic rifles. We've had semi-automatic shotguns and rifles for 100 years. You know, if you ever visit the NRA Museum, and there's a firearm that's there that was carried by Lewis and Clark in 1806 as they explored the West. It was an air gun. And it turns out that air gun, and I didn't even know it existed until I went to the museum and saw it, that air gun was a semi-automatic air gun that could fire 20 round balls as fast as you could pull the trigger. It would be illegal today, under some of the proposed laws that have passed in some states and that the Biden administration would pass nationally. So these things are nothing new. They're nothing that have been banned. They're not responsible for the crime and mayhem that are ascribed to them. The responsibility lies with the criminals who misuse firearms.
Yeah. So it's not gun violence. It's criminal misuse of a firearm.
And in fact, according to the FBI statistics, these so-called assault weapons, and that really means guns that don't look like these folks want guns to look like, are responsible for statistically very, very little mayhem. In fact, all long arms are, according to the FBI statistics, you're more likely to be beaten to death than to be shot by someone with a rifle or an AR-15 or the like. So what they're doing is using this as a way to go after firearms in general. If the American people know what's going on, they rise up and stop it. That's why during the debates you haven't heard any of the moderators ask any questions to speak of about the Second Amendment. And when Joe Biden travels the country, and even when Kamala Harris travels the country, they don't talk a lot about what they want to do about firearms, because they know that threatens a backlash among voters who will vote against them and for Second Amendment rights. But that doesn't stop them from taking this fellow Beto O'Rourke and making him the guy that they're going to put in charge of firearms policy. He, after all, is the former presidential candidate who said, hell yes, we're coming after your AR-15. Joe Biden wants to make it, among other things, among the radical proposals, is he wants to make it illegal for any gun part, a set of pistol grips, a screw, repair pieces, anything, a choke tube, to be sold over the Internet, which would basically make it impossible or practically impossible for people in many parts of this country to be able to repair an existing firearm, for example. And he would make it illegal even for gun dealers to purchase anything, licensed gun dealers to purchase anything in that way. So I guess you'd have to drive hundreds of miles in some cases to get the parts you need to fix your gun. If your shotgun stock cracks, you can't get another one unless you do that. He wants to make it legal, as the left attempted a couple of decades ago, to hold firearms manufacturers responsible not for defects in the workmanship, not for negligence on their part, but he wants to hold them responsible for something that someone does with a firearm, which would be the equivalent of holding General Motors responsible for somebody who gets drunk and hits somebody with the car. That was made illegal by the Congress because it was realized that, one, it's not something that works in any other areas, and two, it was really designed not because they thought they could win those cases, but because they thought they could break the American firearms industry and send them all into bankruptcy. A lot of these companies have gone into bankruptcy several times anyway. So Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, if they get there and if they have a Senate majority, they would wipe out the American manufacturer of firearms. They would make it impossible for firearms to be fixed. They would license firearms. They would do all of the things that Michael Bloomberg and his friends want to do, and they know that if they do that, there's one problem they face, and that's the United States Supreme Court. And they have to change that.
Well, David, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you very, very much for joining us today. This is quite an opportunity, a delightful opportunity to have you on the show. One fast question before we let you go. When are we going to see more from the NRA on the campaign? We only have about 30 seconds for your answer.
Well, we're already out there. We've done more on micro-targeting and social media and all of the things that we do in modern campaigns than we've ever done in history. And before it's over, we have raised the funds necessary to make the impact we need to make on gun owners to get the message out and get them to the polls.
Well, that's good to know. We're going to need to leave it right there. Thanks for joining us today on Inside Track. And
My pleasure.
All of our listeners, we've enjoyed having the opportunity to talk with CD1 Republican candidate for Congress, Tiffany Shedd, and conservative icon, David Keene.
And we want you back, David.
Anytime.
You bet. Until next week, when we visit with CD2 Republican candidate Brandon Martin and Manhattan Institute scholar Ray Domenico on school choice, this is Bruce Ash
and Eb Wilkinson wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
I'm Eb Wilkinson with Imus Wilkinson Investment Management. I don't ever want you to be dependent on government ever again. I want you to become financially independent. You will never, ever have to depend on socialist security for your survival. We are here to guide you to financial independence. That's imuswilkinson.com, 777-1911. That's 777-1911.